the place for talk on the internet. This is TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com.
Welcome to today's show on TalkZone Radio. My name's Quint Studer, and I'm the host of the radio show today. And we're talking, of course, about healthcare and how to make healthcare better for patients, physicians, and employees. Today, it's my great honor to have Rich Bluhney. Rich Bluhney is an RN. He works for Studer Group. He's got a long history of being a nurse and making a difference in healthcare. The topic today we're going to talk about is one, Rich's book, Inspired Nurse, and his journal, and how best to use this. And because feedback I get from nurses around the country is how much they enjoy this book, and it all, both brings them back to purpose, but also helps them, again, improve their skill set, both from a emotional perspective and also a clinical perspective. And also, Rich is a safety expert and travels the country speaking about how to create a more safe environment for our patients. And I want to talk to Rich about his travels and what he recommends to improve quality and safety in hospitals and other healthcare organizations across the United States. Well, Rich, you got a new baby at home, huh?
Yes, I do. He's about 6 months, so, but I guess that still counts as new. Anything under a year, right?
I guess is the you're over your sleep deprivation then, huh?
Actually, it's much better. He's sleeping like almost six and a half hours in a row. So I feel like a whole new person these days.
That's wonderful. And Dawn, your wife, she's a nurse, and she's has a trauma background, and now is a professor of nursing.
Yeah, that's correct. We pretty much have a nursing family here. So yeah.
And your father was in healthcare, wasn't he?
Yeah, my dad was a maintenance foreman of a large county hospital, gosh, pretty much my whole life, from I think around 1968 when we moved to Miami from New York till he passed away in 1990. So I grew up kind of sometimes going to work with my dad in the middle of the night when a window would break or generator would fail. I remember being a little kid, and now these days a risk manager would fall off their chair knowing that, but I remember being a little kid and going with my dad back to the shop while he fixed things, because he understood that if he didn't fix things and things didn't work well, then doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers couldn't save lives and take care of patients. So he took that job very seriously.
Well, we don't want to forget Rhett. You better mention Rhett. We don't want any sibling issues here.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about
Rhett. I have an 11-year-old son, Rhett, who definitely enjoys the fact that his dad and his parents are all nurses, and he enjoys it a lot. He likes telling his friends that his dad's a nurse, and that he really was more excited, I think, when I worked trauma in ER, because, you know, in his mind that was like the cool stuff, because sometimes I'd fly in helicopters and things like that, so he liked that. But he enjoys what I do right now. He thinks it's neat that I travel around, and he likes me to bring him postcards from wherever I go.
Well, let's talk a little bit, and I do want to get into your book, and I want to get into quality, but you've told a story about your father one time that I heard that was quite remarkable about his career in healthcare. And so many people I meet in healthcare, not that you have to, because I didn't have anyone in healthcare personally, but many, many people I meet in healthcare come from a background of either they were a patient. For example, Stephanie Baker, one of our guest on the show, was an ER nurse. One of the things that attracted her to healthcare, she had terrible asthma as a child and spent a lot of time in hospitals.
Right.
We talked to people whose mom was a nurse or dad was a nurse or doctors or phlebotomist or, you know, like you, a facility person. So is that one of the things that attracted you to be a nurse, the impact of your father or the impact of his experience in healthcare?
Well, you know, what's interesting is initially I would say just from seeing the work that he did, if anything, I had an interest at first in just how things worked. I mean, he was just one of these people that was just gifted with the ability to fix anything. And so I remember being a little boy and handing him tools and just thinking, wow, this is so neat that he knows how to fix, you know, anything from a generator to, you know, a vacuum cleaner. But, you know, in actuality, Quint, interestingly enough, he kind of brought me to healthcare in a whole different way. My dad, when he was about 57 years old, right in mid-1989, was diagnosed with terminal cancer. I was a young guy. I was probably about 20, 21 around that time. And I moved back to Miami from New York, where I had gone to college, and because my dad got sick, and I moved back home to help take care of him. And, you know, I would work during the day, and I also worked at night as well. And, but in between, on days off and on the weekends, I'd stay with my dad. And kind of was with him on that whole journey. He unfortunately he passed away about a year after his diagnosis in 1990, but it was during that time that I decided that I wanted to be a nurse. I saw how my dad was cared for and the difference that nurses made for him as I'd sit with him in his hospital room. If anything, you know, there were times that it seemed that my dad felt more comfortable in being himself and talking about how he felt with nurses that were taking care of him than he did, you know, even with his own wife or his other family members, almost as if he trusted these folks so much that he could be honest and he could be real. And I just thought, what a neat thing. And I just saw what a difference they made. Having never had an interest really before that in being a nurse or going into healthcare. And so that really was the start of my journey. It was helping take care of my dad, and nurses that would be at the bedside would, you know, say, hey, you know, you're good at this, or, you know, wow, you got a great touch, or you're real gentle, or, you know, you're very, you know, very caring. You know, have you ever thought of being a nurse? And that's really what led me there. And before my dad passed away, he saw me get accepted into nursing school. The hospital that he worked at named a scholarship after him, which I was the first recipient of. They named a street after him as well at this hospital. So, you know, really owe it to my dad. Great guy, you know, eighth grade education, was, you know, really focused on maintenance and engineering and fixing things, and was so proud of the fact that down the road I became a nurse.
Well, I think you told the story too about, tell us about the naming of the street, because I know that impact that had on you.
That was real neat. My dad, in his role where he worked as a foreman in maintenance, they also had a committee at the hospital. I think it was called, if I remember correctly, it was called the Image Committee, and it was something that was like a multidisciplinary group of people. And their whole function was to provide folks at the hospital, so a large county hospital, Jackson Memorial Hospital, Miami, University of Miami Hospital, large hospital, to provide, you know, different activities. Now, you know, we'd call it reward and recognition activities. Back then, they just called it, you know, employee activities. And he was real active in that. My dad just felt real strongly that you had to love going to work. He was a guy that worked from 1968 till he passed away in 1990. And I think up till prior to him getting ill, had never called out sick, never took a sick day, no matter what. It took terminal cancer for my dad to finally not go to work one day, God bless him. But he was real active in this committee and just really, really focused on making a difference for people. And they do fairs. They had an old building that used to be the original hospital that they raised money to, literally, it's called the Alamo because it looks like the Alamo in Texas. They literally picked it up and moved it two or three city blocks, and it's now a museum on the campus there. When my dad passed away, the street that's right next to the trauma center that's in Miami, they named Jack Blinney Drive after my dad. And it was so neat because for so many years, because my last name's a little unusual, when I worked there, people would periodically, they'd notice the sign and they'd ask me, oh, you know, was there any relation to the person that's name's on the sign? And I'd say, yeah, that was my dad. And I remember one time one of the unit secretaries that I worked with, she was hysterical. She was very, very funny. She was like a female Ricky Ricardo. She was, I believe, from Puerto Rico, and she'd always joke around with me. And my dad's street's Jack Blinney Drive. And so she came up to me one day at work, and she's just kind of glaring at me. And her name was Ileana. I said, Ileana, what's wrong? And she had this very thick accent. And she goes, Richard, you never told me your father was a doctor. I looked at her. I said, Ileana, my father wasn't a doctor. She goes, yes, he was. I said, Ileana, he wasn't a doctor. She said, well, how come the sign says Jack Blinney Doctor? I said, Ileana, Jack Blinney Drive. And then she just looked at me. She said, you're going to tell that story to everybody, aren't you? I said, for the rest of my life.
Well, Rich, and I know what a caring person you are, and I think healthcare is blessed to have you and Dawn both in healthcare. And I know Dawn uses your book, and as do some other nursing programs, use your book as one of their guides that they use for nurses because it connects. So let me ask a little bit about you, because you obviously, being someone now with an expert in quality and safety, and also a person that took time to write a book for and all caregivers, but certainly it's called Inspired Nurse, geared more, you know, at the nurse, though I have found other people that have read it have also connected with it. Tell us a little bit now. You changed. You were going to be one thing, and obviously the impact of your father, you got to nursing school. So walk us through a little bit about your career.
You know, I've always was attracted to areas where there was some action, you know, where you could, maybe a little bit of an adrenaline rush. My first job, actually, right out of nursing school, was in adolescent oncology. I found that I wanted to have some kind of med-surg, you know, floor-based, you know, some kind of, you know, good, solid foundation for nursing, because I knew at some point I wanted to do things like intensive care and trauma, and I really, really enjoyed pediatrics. I just related well. I like the... You kind of, in pediatrics, you've got two patients. I mean, I'm not saying it's too much different in adult care, but with pediatrics, you've got the child, and then you've got usually the family member, the caregiver, the parent. So you're definitely kind of a caregiver in both situations. And I really like that. The adolescent aspect of it was kind of interesting for me because it wasn't an area that a lot of nurses were going to. You know, a lot of nurses were a little uncomfortable or even sometimes, you know, afraid, if you will, of teenagers because, you know, they're like little mini adults in some ways, you know, they're young people. And sometimes, you know, people want to either take care of the cute little babies or take care of grown-ups. And I just really liked it. It was a tough job because at the time, adolescent oncology was difficult in the late 80s. I mean, things have improved much since then, but you know, there was a lot of children who were terminal and who didn't make it, and that was difficult to see people cut down even before the prime of their life. But it really kind of prepared me for communicating well, and it prepared me for empathy, and it prepared me for caring. It prepared me to really understand that, you know, in one shift at this job, I have more of an opportunity to make a difference in the life of a human being than some people will have in an entire lifetime at theirs. I went from there to pediatric intensive care, and, you know, this was at a university-level hospital, so it was everything from heart transplants and multivisceral transplants, burn patients, trauma, and a whole, you know, whole host of any level one type critical care thing. We took care of everything from babies to, you know, 17, 18 year olds. I went from there to trauma intensive care. I had decided at that point I had had almost a decade of pediatrics under my wing, and I really wanted to round out, and I really loved our trauma center. It was kind of neat, Quint. Sometimes I would actually be working at Rider Trauma Center, and I could look out the window of one of the units where we'd be, and I could look down literally and see my dad's street. And more than one time I would be standing there, you know, finished caring for a patient, and I'd sit down at the computer to do some of my, you know, input, some of my documentation, and I'd literally look over the top of the computer and I could see my dad's street sign there. And it would always kind of bittersweet. You know, there was a part of me that would think, wow, that's really neat, and there was another part of me that would say, wow, I wish he was here. But I felt he was. I went from there to another hospital. I had an opportunity to be a manager and to make a difference in that way, and I ran an emergency department for a short time in the Palm Beach area. And then eventually really started having an interest in risk management and patient safety. Got my license in risk management and then became a director of risk management and patient safety, and did that for a number of years prior to joining the Studer Group.
Right, and that's how I met you. I remember I was speaking and somebody, one of our coaches, Karen Cook, came up to me who was working with your hospital and said, you've got to meet this fellow, Rich Blooney. I think you were head of the measurement team, and she really wanted to meet you because she thought you were really a special caregiver, which you absolutely are. And you've been with us for a couple years now, Rich?
Yeah, it's going to be 3 years, February 5th.
Wow, that's amazing. And tell us a bit, as you travel the country, where were you in the last couple weeks?
Wow, I've been fortunate to be at some neat places. I was in Los Angeles. I went to Cedars-Sinai, which is just a, you know, an amazing organization right there in Beverly Hills of all places, which was kind of neat. Went there, and I was in Ottawa, Canada. Went to the Ottawa Hospital there in Canada, which was amazing. Yesterday, I was in South Carolina at Palmetto Health System, and was fortunate enough to speak to 900 people at their Leadership Development Institute, which was just an absolute rush. You know, from being a speaker, it's wonderful to have those small intimate groups and medium-sized groups, but when you have those real big groups of people, when they're really engaged, it's a lot of fun. But those are the three places I've been most recently in the last week or so. But gosh, prior to that, Quinn, I've been in Tupelo, Mississippi, and a lot of really neat places, and looking forward to having a busy rest of this month and ending the year making a difference.
Well, you know, going back to, it's interesting, I got a phone call the other day from a person who had spoken to Palmetto Healthcare, and he's not in healthcare, but he's a professional speaker, he's a author, and he called me up because he said he doesn't usually speak to healthcare, but he was just blown away about how united the group was and how aligned they were, and he was just about how receptive they were to getting better, and he asked them, where do you get this, and they mentioned some of the work that we do, so he called me just curious about what it is. Well, let me ask you a question. You go to a Cedars-Sinai, for example, or a Ottawa or a Palmetto, and I know you're going to individualize the talk to the organization, but also your expertise. Well, what is your main message, for example, when you were at Cedars-Sinai or some of these? Was it on safety? Was it on quality?
Yeah, Cedars-Sinai, interestingly enough, yeah, the focus there was on patient safety. And you know, I've been fortunate enough to be part of the team in our organization and Studer Group to crosswalk a lot of our skills and the tactics that we've utilized and put into practice that really initially were there for, you know, employee and patient satisfaction, certainly. But what we found is many of these tactics and skills impact quality and patient safety. So I was giving them, because they're a relatively new partner with us, kind of an overview, if you will, best practices, to walk them through the different tools that we bring to healthcare organizations to make a difference. You know, for example, how, you know, we can use rounding on employees for patient safety to find out where they feel that, you know, safety is going really well, or where there's some opportunities for improvement, rounding with patients to really get in there and make patients part of their patient safety process. You know, that's what I often say when I speak, and usually a big takeaway that people walk away from with my presentations from feedback that I've gotten is that we often leave the patient out of patient safety. We make the mistake of kind of doing everything like it's this top secret kind of thing that only we know about, like, you know, some secret handshake in the lodge kind of thing. And meanwhile, here you've got somebody sitting in the bed or a family member sitting next to them who would be a great resource, who would be a great kind of, you know, first line of defense to protect that patient. And oftentimes what I found in my own practice before and in healthcare organizations where I've worked, and also as a coach and as a speaker with Studer Group, I found that a lot of teams fail to bring those patients into that. So that was a big piece of what I spoke about there. And I found, especially Cedars and a couple of the other organizations, I noticed that's a big takeaway is wow, you know, we're not involving the patient and the process.
Let me ask you a question on that, Rich, because, and again, it's amazing because you mentioned organizations that are already excellent with national reputations. And that's the other thing I always tell people. I say, you know, most of the organizations that call us or we work with are really already well-known, pretty good, very good, sometimes excellent, and it seems they're the ones that desperately want to always get better. It's that nurse that's always ahead of the game that wants to stay ahead. So as we wrap up this last minute, 30 seconds before we go into our first break, let me ask you a question for our listeners that might not be that familiar with some of the tactics. Explain, when you say rounding on employees for safety, what rounding is and what you mean by, how would you round on an employee for patient safety?
Sure. Oftentimes in healthcare we use the terminology rounding, which, you know, goes back to the days where, and present day and in the past, where the healthcare team would make rounds, which is going from patient to patient, discussing their case, and would back and forth share information. In the beginning, those rounds were just with the healthcare team. Later on, for more advanced organizations, the rounds would often include the patient and the patient's family. And our organization in Studer Group, when we talk about rounding on an employee, for example, it's when we go around and have conversations with employees for an objective. We're rounding for an outcome, not just walking up to them as a manager, as a leader, and saying, hi, how you doing? Are you having a good day? Nice to see you. Thanks for all you do. See you later. Or what we call sometimes in the South, maybe howdy rounds, or if you were in New York, how you doing rounds kind of thing. The idea with rounding on employees is that you're going out there with purpose. You're making sure they have the tools to do their job, making sure that you're answering any questions that they have, and finding out, you know, what they might need and what they think is going well or what can be worked on. So when you use that tactic or that tool for patient safety, you go out there and you find out where gaps are. You know, you ask an employee a specific question, like, were you able to care for your patients as safely as possible this week? If they say yes, you find out why, and then you give them more of whatever enabled that. If they say no, you know, actually I had a hard time giving safe care to my patients this week or this weekend or yesterday, you find out what was the fallout, what was missing.
You know what, Rich, we have to take a short break, and I don't want to cut this short in essence because I want to start it right after break because I have a few questions for you. So it's time to take a short break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of Rich Blooney right after this.